Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I'm joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blurred Girl, Kara Mahorn, and Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski. I smiled real hard while I did it that time.
And you should.
Trying to keep the energy
Introducing
up.
Us is, should be the highlight of your day.
I mean, I was up at 4 a.m. The highlight of my day is when I go back to sleep.
Are you just high on caffeine? Or
but you could take number... No, I don't know. No? I'm high on life.
High on life. Right. Wow. Wow. That's what they're calling it these days. Life.
Yep. That is... hey. Lots of stuff. So here's the thing. A lot of things happened this week. Feel like it might end up being a little bit of a hodgepodge. It's going to be a lot of things that are kind of winning our personal week, the stuff that we were sort of into. Karma brought some stuff to the table that I think we watched, and Karma was right.
Can we just make that on a loop that Karma was right? Can we just put that should be our commercial just for 30 seconds.
Oh, Karma was right.
That's the name of your personal spinoff
Karma
podcast.
Was right. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. Ooh, Adam, you're brilliant.
There
okay,
you go.
I'll have to give you a percentage of that.
There you go. I was going to have a podcast, too. It was called Danny Fell Asleep.
Yeah, no.
Because fall asleep during every movie. Anyway, enough of the side podcasts that are never going to get made. There's a lot of things. We're going to talk about some TV shows that came out, some Netflix stuff that dropped, a couple of news items, some video game business, a lot of zombies, weirdly.
A lot of zombies.
But first, we do the thing at the top of every program where we talk about things we're personally geeking out about. Adam.
Yes.
What are you into this?
It's been kind of a weird week. I haven't had a chance to dive into a lot of stuff fully. I've bounced around. I watched Black Panther again. Played a little Spider-Man, but not
Black
enough
on
to...
My phone.
What's
just
that?
I keep Black Panther on my phone, just yeah. in case I need a... Yeah. Just need a shout out or
it's
something.
It's streaming. But I bounced around a few things. I guess the biggest thing is my insomnia book is I've made a very poor choice. I don't know if you know about this, but one of the things they say when you have insomnia is that you go out, leave the bedroom because you don't want to associate your bedroom with sleeplessness.
Right.
Go out in the living room or something and read or do something very low energy that's going to supposedly soothe you into this area of being able to go back to sleep. And unfortunately, I picked a really good book, which is The Golden Compass, which I have read before by Philip Pullman. I was like, I've read this before and it won't be bad. And then I got super excited reading it because it's a really good book. Those books are awesome. The His Dark Materials trilogy. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend anyone read them, except not when you're trying to go to sleep.
Because it's a good book.
Yeah,
so it will not put you to sleep.
The thing that you read, it's like read a magazine, read a cookbook, read something that's not compelling. And I've disregarded that advice to my own disadvantage. So anyway, but
so
yeah,
you're
it's
sleepy,
been fun.
But happy.
It's been fun rereading The Golden Compass, which is great. It's a really great book. And it's just fun rereading it, knowing what comes in the next two books and where that series goes. And it's just such a set up. It's almost like the free sample, you know. It's like, oh, it's this kid young adult fantasy story, and then, you know, everybody come, it's like Harry Potter, everybody's gonna love it. And then next two books, it's like, and it deals with concepts of existence and whether God exists, and if so, is he evil, you know, like these really adult themes that the series eventually gets into. So it's kind of fun rereading The Golden Compass knowing that that's what's coming.
Upbeat.
Yeah.
So, okay, note to self, read The Golden Compass, but not
just not when you're trying to go to sleep.
Not when you're trying to go to sleep. Okay.
Karama.
I actually am still geeking out about last weekend was, and thank you for Danny for coming out to the Schomburg, to the Black Comic Book Fest.
You're welcome. I'm a great friend.
You are, because that's a hike. And you did it, and I'm proud of you. And you came to my panel, which was really nice. And I had a panel about Black women in comics, which was a lot of fun. But actually, this year, the whole thing, the whole event kind of leveled up. It was the first time in years I've seen the whole museum opened. So it was like three full floors, stuff on every floor. There were stars walking around. Like, saw Ryan Sands from Runaways and, oh God, the cop friend from Punisher. Cannot remember his name right now.
Okay, I know you're talking about that.
Jason Moore. And then there was a special screening for kids, which I thought was great, of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And then Lauren Velez was there to talk after it, the woman who plays Miles' mom. And it was, and for those of you who might remember, she was years ago on, she was on a couple of network TV shows. But anyway, it was fun. It was really nice seeing a bunch of people that I hadn't seen in a while because even you live in Queens. I live in Brooklyn. Harlem is still a hike for me. So
see, I can just get in a Lyft and be fine. That it wasn't really a lot. I literally was writing, and then got in a Lyft.
And then went
and
straight across.
And 15 minutes later was there.
Oh, you're closer than I am.
Watched the panel.
And then
said,
got in a Lyft and went back.
Oh, bye.
Well, and Danny did not walk away from the event. It was actually my panel was the last one. So yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. And there was a lot of great artists that I got to see. And then one of the artists that I got to see there was someone who creates a little comic called Princess Love Pond, Shauna. I was about to say Mills. That's funny. And Shauna was actually highlighted this week on Sci-Fi. They had her in the Artist Alley, which was Shauna Grant, rather, which I thought was really cute. And I was so happy for her because she's an up-and-coming artist, and it's nice to see like some of the little guys get a shout-out. So that's what I'm geeking out over. How about you, Danny? I don't think Adam cares, but I care.
Oh, wow. Jeez. What happened this week? Lots of stuff. I don't see it written on the sheet here, so I don't know if we're going to talk about the Steven Universe finale, but it kind of felt like the last episode they'd ever have to do. It felt like they wrapped the whole thing up.
All I know is Twitter exploded. I didn't watch it when it aired. But
all the questions that really needed answering got answered. Every major plot thread
got tied up.
Tied up in a bow. It was real good.
Magical bow?
Yeah, of course. Lots of new fusions and some good songs. It was very upbeat, but the last song they sing is very short, and I found it real great. The lyrics are thus, I don't need you to respect me, I respect me. I don't need you to love me, I love me.
Aww.
But I want you to know you could know me if you just change your mind. It was very upbeat, but that thing was kind of challenging, and I really appreciated that. I just thought it was a really good episode, so that happened. And the other thing kind of related to the Schoenberg a little bit, because one of the guests that you had on your panel is Vita Ayala.
Yep.
This week, it was announced that Vita Ayala will be writing Xena Warrior Princess, the new, I believe it's Dynamite, who's putting out that comic, and their editorial partner, Danny Lohr, has a comic coming out through Vault called, Queen of Bad Dreams. So both of them had really big comic book announcements, and they are, two of my Forbidden Planet family. So knowing that they're both blowing up was really winning my week.
Vita's been blowing up. Like, they have, how many comics since this time last year? Like, eight, I feel like. Also,
It's a lot. Yeah, Livewire number 2 came out this week.
They're working on Shuri, which is going to come out.
Yep. Submerged is coming out in the trade next week.
Yes. In fact, I just interviewed them for my column this week on that. So, every time I turn around, every time I see Vita, I'm like, you again? Because it seems like we see each other all the time, and I'm not complaining because they're doing great.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. That's been my week. Hey, Oscars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a thing.
You mean the Black Panthers Oscars?
No, it's not.
There were other people.
There were absolutely other people.
It's mostly just that, but you know.
But no, actually, I would love it for it to win, for a superhero movie to win Best Picture. But I was actually really, really, really rooting for Ruth Carter for costume design because I just that's been my thing for you. Like, please let Ruth win this award. She's been passed over so many times.
Yeah, she is up for it, so that's good. So that was sort of the big thing. They made a lot of announcements. The biggest thing being I think Black Panther's up for what, 7 or 8 awards.
Yeah, so I think it's
not enough.
Yeah, it's best.
Wow,
picture. Yeah,
no, I'm
it's
not. Really upset about the Oscar nominations.
What? All right,
here's my thought.
All right, so Ryan Coogler should have been up for director.
It's amazing that Black Panther is one of the best pictures and yet without any good acting or directing or writing, you know, the things that make a good movie, surprisingly, amazingly, those people didn't get nominated. It's the strangest thing.
Yeah. It's like it couldn't have acted itself.
Right.
Yeah.
And again, having watched it again, literally last night.
It's a very strange thing that every year I ask that question.
That Michael B. Jordan didn't get a nomination is ridiculous. I would have even gone for Danai Gurira for Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah.
And Ryan Coogler deserved a nomination, hands down. And the fact that he didn't get one is absurd. I guess they felt like they checked their box with Spike Lee. But
yeah, they gave all the stuff. They gave all the stuff to Black Klansman, and I mean, like,
I really enjoyed Black Klansman, but I'm saying, like,
it's not the same movie.
Not necessarily related to genre.
Black Panther in the Best Picture category, to not nominate any of the before in front of the camera people or Ryan Coogler is ridiculous to me.
I do think that you are probably maybe correct about because they gave all this stuff to Black Panther, but then if you look at the a lot of these acting categories and directing categories, they'll say, well, you know, but Black Klansman, Green Book. I mean, we can't give it all to black-related stuff, can
right,
we?
Right.
Couldn't possibly do that. And the whole Green Book thing is a mess.
Well, the fact that Mahershala is getting Best Supporting, but also the whole thing with Black Panther and Black Klansman both being up for Best Picture, they can go ahead and give the Oscar. I bet you they're going to give the Oscar to Spike Lee for Best Direction so that they can give the picture to Black Panther.
Really?
They're not going to give Black Panther's not going to win
you don't
Best
think
Picture.
So?
No.
I mean, I guess I have
no
idea.
Give it to A Star
I
is
think
Born.
It's going to be Green Book
oh,
or Roma.
Man. Yeah, I just watched A Star
Roma,
is Born.
Roma, I heard, is amazing. I haven't watched
Roma yet either, but which is weird because I'm a huge Alfonso Cuarón stan. I love that guy
and
everything he does.
800,000 other things to watch.
I know. It's true. And it's also one of those things where it's like I want to watch it where I can sit down and give it
and
my
enjoy,
full focus
yeah.
and really pay attention. And most of my watching time has been while I've been trying to do two other things at the same time. So
yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like I really want to be present for that movie when I see it. But yeah, that was just my take. It's like listen, and like production design and then visual effects, all that stuff, great, whatever. But
what about the actors?
That's what genre always gets. You know,
you're right.
And I was just disappointed. I think that at the least Ryan Coogler deserved it because that movie was a huge trap that could have been horrible in the wrong hands, or it could have been standard in the wrong hands. And I feel like he did such a great job elevating it beyond the norms of the genre, you know, the superhero movie genre, and introducing these big ideas and having them make sense within a big action-packed superhero story. It's miraculous that it worked as well as it did, and the fact that that gets no recognition makes me sad.
Yeah. So I also am kind of, I mean, this is not as important. Oh, I'm sure it's important to somebody. I am genuinely surprised that there was no visual effects nomination for Aquaman. That's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I thought that was strange, too.
Really?
Because I thought they might... No, honestly,
because they introduced some really new technology in that movie.
And I'm not saying the movie itself was good. It should definitely not win Best Picture or anything, but I thought... Hair and makeup, something.
Yeah, I was surprised that there was nothing. That was weird, really weird to me that it got known. They're going to give nothing, and yet, you know, something like Ready Player One or Solo.
Ready
Star
Player
Wars
One
story.
Getting nominated for that was absurd.
And it's just weird, you know. I would sooner put Aquaman and, honestly, Mortal Engines. I would much sooner put those in.
Say,
like, really, that was not up for visual effects. The visual effects in that movie were next level.
The thing about Ready Player One is it's all just it's animation. Like we've seen animation a lot. What does it do that you're right? Like that it hasn't been done before. That really is super compelling and serves a story. I don't know. I mean, to me, the most interesting category is the animated feature.
I was about to say the same thing.
I think that's going to be especially for fans of sci-fi, et cetera, mm-hmm. because I think that I mean you've got. Freaking Ralph Breaks the Internet, which I haven't seen yet, but you know
it was incredible. And
it's then you've got Miyazaki, obviously.
I was gonna say that's not a Miyazaki.
No.
Mariah's. That's like I think this is the first time that a non-Ghibli,
that's right,
Japanese animated movie got actually nominated for this.
And you know, and then you got Incredibles 2, which is Pixar basically wins this category every year.
But and it's not going to happen this year.
I know. Spider-Verse is the disruptor.
I mean, it's easily the top three best movies of 2018.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's going to be interesting because, I mean, the Academy doesn't have a tendency to be adventurous.
No, they don't.
Will they just be like, okay, it's Pixar and check the box, or will they?
I think Spider-Man as a thing, just because he's a known quantity and it's already won another award and it's got all this huge word of mouth. I mean, I don't think it's going to anything else. I don't think it's going to like Mariah or Isle of Dogs, you know?
I love Isle of Dogs, but yeah.
I'm not trying to say anything down about it, and I haven't seen Mariah yet, but Mariah's got that Girl Who Leapt Through Time type of vibe to it, Your Name kind of thing. So that's right in my wheelhouse. But yeah, it's not winning any Oscars.
I was happy also to see Bao, which was the Pixar short that played before Incredibles.
Yeah, I love Bao.
That one almost had me in tears. That was such a beautiful little movie. And then it's funny because apparently that the person who animated that was not a full-time like employee of Pixar. Like that was sort of I don't know if it was a contest or if it was sort of a one-off kind of thing, but she's gone on to be hired and apparently is the first, I don't want to say she's the first Asian American lead animator there, but I think she's the first Asian American woman, female writer there, which I thought was like weird. I still think it's weird in 2018 that we're still saying the first of anything.
Still going.
Or 2019, sorry. What year is it? Where am I?
Anyway, I'm not half as mad about that as I am about the fact that the Venom song by Eminem wasn't nominated for Best Song.
God.
What are we doing? How did I not get in? Anyway.
I honestly, here's the thing. I just thought I'm looking at Black Klansman and all of its nominations like I looked at how many times Whoopi Goldberg was overlooked and then she won for like Ghost. And you were like, that is not the most amazing thing Whoopi Goldberg had done at that point in her career. And it's just one of those things where...
But I think Black Klansman is the best thing Spike Lee has done in a long time.
It is. And, I completely agree.
You know,
I feel like he should have won years ago for things like Malcolm X and stuff like that.
Well, yeah, that was the real snub. But, you know, like Crooklyn and what was the other one? Has a really long name. Oh, Jesus. I forget. Having something to do with the blood of the something and something. I can't remember.
Oh, I think I was talking about.
But anyway, he's kind of had a
like
few...
Like a sophomore Fiona Apple length title.
Yeah, exactly. And they were fine. But
he
Black
didn't even
Klansman...
win for the documentary he did on the three black girls that were killed. Like, I thought that, like, even at the documentary level, he just couldn't win. And so he's one of those, like, him, Leonardo DiCaprio, and a bunch of other
and
people.
And my personal snub, other than the Black Panther people, is Tom York. For the Spiria score / soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. I still haven't listened to it.
I've heard it's amazing.
I mean, not that, you know, the best original song thing is...
Well, I guess everything is not in its right place.
That's right. That's right. But,
that's a Radiohead reference.
I mean, the best original song is going to the Star Is Born song. That's predetermined. They might as well just grab the trophy now and not...
I would like that to be the only thing that movie gets. This is a sci-fi podcast, but let's just be clear. I've watched A Star Is Born. Star Is Born is the most jumpy, all over the place. Keeps feeling like we're skipping entire. Everything feels like a time skip, but they don't ever say that it is. It's very strange to me.
You can have 100 people not believe in you, and all you need is that one person to believe in you, and that was Bradley Cooper.
You know, I'm just thinking about this off the top of my head, but you know. I'm not gonna rip off a Golden Globes.
Yeah,
we are not Sandra Oh or Andy Samberg.
I'm kind of Sandra Oh-esque.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I'm very Andy Samberg.
There you go. So we are Sandra Oh. Anyway,
cool.
Moving on.
Yeah. Anyway, completely unrelated to that. I feel kind of the opposite of TV is the internet. So there's like a bunch of. A bunch of bummers were happening in the world. Everybody was really depressed. This thing happened in America where, you know, the Supreme Court decided they were going to force through this mandate that trans people were not going to be allowed to serve, which sucks. And I'm very angry about it. And at the same time, this guy who created a bunch of TV shows, including a nerdy show that a lot of people like called The IT Crowd, this guy, Graham Linehan, raised a big stink about money being given from the lottery in Britain towards Mermaids, which is a thing to support trans youth and non-binary youth and their families. And he said, oh, you know, they should, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter what his argument is. It's garbage. Right. Anyway.
He had his opinion, but the point is Mermaids is a real.
Yes, and they're very helpful.
Legitimate.
And they're not giving out drugs or anything to anybody. It's just a service. It provides, you know, general care. And all of a sudden this question was, is the National Lottery actually going to give this money? So Harry Bruis, who is a great guy, he's a YouTuber. He's actually was on an episode of Everyday Horror. We talked about Hereditary. And he decided, hey, I would like to do something to raise money towards Mermaids in case they don't get anything. So I've never beaten, I've never bested Donkey Kong 64. It's my nemesis.
Right.
So I'm gonna spend the weekend streaming it nonstop, no matter how long it takes. I'm gonna get 101%. I'm gonna get everything you can get on this game. We're gonna have guests come on. We're gonna raise some money. And they ended up raising, you know, like $340,000 in 52 hours or whatever it was. And they had all sorts of people come on. A lot of internet celebrities dropped in. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez made an appearance for about 10 minutes.
Alexandria has retweeted. Oh, my God.
So yeah. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez has joined the Discord server.
What?
Oh, my.
It's got. She's got the official posing in front of the flag.
Oh.
My name is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I am the congresswoman for New York's 14th congressional district. Trans rights, absolutely. It's a no-brainer. Trans rights are civil rights, are human rights.
I didn't know what was happening, and then I saw Spike Chapman on my time and just started pulling up, like, oh my God, AOS is on Twitch. AOS is a Twitch. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
And it was kind of surreal. By the time I got there, I think, by the time I saw it and everything, I think she'd already left. But it was so profound.
I happened to check in. I just clicked on it as she came on. It was out of weird luck. And yes, it was kind of profound. It said something, I think, about what it means to have a rep that is younger, that they're going to have the smarts
also,
to know that doing
cares.
Something like that is... Yeah, no, I mean, I don't doubt... I think a lot of people do genuinely care. I think it's... I mean, maybe some people don't. But not only does she care, but I think that she really knows how to sort of make that something that people are aware of. And doing that on a stream like that, that was doing so much good. Like, I can't think of a single bad thing that came out of that. They raised a lot of money to help kids. A lot of people came together. A lot of folks that are often oppressed got to tell their stories. And there were thousands and thousands of people watching. So they were getting to have those stories heard. It was just, you know, people talk about how bad games are all the time, how bad the gaming community is, blah, blah, blah. And it can be just like any community. But I don't want us to lose sight of the fact that there's also people who gave this amount of money and stuck with this guy and listened to these stories. And that is also the gaming community. That's good. That is a unquestionable good in the world that happened this week. I just want people to remember that it happened.
I acknowledge that, but I'm not sold on the gaming community.
You don't have to be sold on it. Okay.
No, I'm not sold on the gaming community either, but I am sold on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And no matter what your politics are, this is my thing. No matter what what side of her politics you fall on, you cannot deny her connection to not just millennials, but also that the geek community, because of all the every time someone tries to hit her with, like, on social media with a meme or something like that.
Oh yeah, she can clap back immediately.
Right. So her command of communicating with people where they are compared to a lot of the other constituents, she's miles ahead of them. And I think there's something to be said for that when you're looking at ways of not just promoting politics, but also communicating with fans, communicating with an audience. Like,
so why aren't we on Twitch right now?
I have to tell you,
here's a fact. Here is a fact. I literally was talking to both Jordan and who was our features editor, and Jackie Jennings, who's the face of the brand, and said, we got to get a Twitch thing going. And Jordan said, you should just do it. Don't ask anybody. Just get Jackie, put a camera on, start doing it, and eventually it'll just... So that may happen. Who knows?
Right.
I really am. I'm very pro that. I do think sci-fi should be doing Twitch stuff. I don't know why. I mean, I'm I know I think, why we're trying to do a million things, so no, I know why I, it hasn't also, happened. But
I also think Twitch last year just went past the point of just being for gamers. Now everybody's like,
please
a lot of people.
Please tell me I'm not
going
to have to pay attention to it.
I think it's happened.
I don't want to.
This was kind of the moment where I acknowledged it. I think that I kind of.
I mean, listen, this is great. What happened with this Donkey Kong 64 stream and everything is that I agree with you. That's a wonderful, beautiful, positive thing in a world where we need a lot more positive things. But I don't want to have to learn. I don't want to have to learn about Twitch and watch Twitch.
Yeah, and you know what? I make $10 million a
Twitter.
Year, and I don't want somebody to take 70% of my $10 million. Then I'll only have $3 million.
You're going off the topic
right,
here.
How
that's
will
so
I survive on $57,000 a week?
And if you have,
as
if
an
you have
old
10
man,
million,
wait, let's not talk about this, you guys, because I don't want to. We all, I think, on this podcast share many similar politics, but I don't think this is the place for that. But I'm saying I just don't want to learn about Twitch. Okay, I just don't want to watch people play games. I don't want to pay attention
you watch
to this
people
world.
Play the game. If you want to give them some money, you
I
want to
go outside. I want to see some sun and some trees. You
so
know?
What you're saying is we should Twitch stream the sun. For
I guess
you.
Yes, exactly.
See,
yeah,
I found the solution. There's a way to marry these things.
All right.
Anyway, hey, did you want to talk quick about, speaking of gaming? You did not play,
no,
but you watched.
Did you guys know how I feel about you, like super horror?
But you did watch.
I did watch my boyfriend play the 30-minute free.
Yeah, of Resident Evil 2.
Resident Evil, and it literally was. It clocked you like it literally was 30 minutes to the second.
Yeah, and as soon as it was done, that was it.
And that was it. Yeah, no matter where you were, half stab and all. I
Twitch stream of somebody who beats it in 30 minutes.
Exactly. It was, we're talking about the Resident Evil that drops actually today. It was, for those of you who are fans of Resident Evil, especially the first one, or you're old enough to remember the one that was on PS1, this is nostalgia for you. You're back in Raccoon City. You've got a lot of the same characters, Claire Redfield, Leon Kennedy. Even Marvin Branna. I was like, is the black guy still going to be the first guy that's gotten bit that you meet? It is. It's upgraded the way it's supposed to be done. Now, I am not a gamer. You guys know this. I'm taking this information from my boyfriend who played this game. He basically was saying what they tried to, the graphics and gameplay and load times are obviously much faster because 2019 versus whatever year it first came out. Fans of the classic game and fans of horror will like this. But even if you're not a fan of those, you know, the original franchise, if you weren't born when it first came out, you'll still like it. It's very slick. The graphics are incredibly detailed. I am regretting eating dinner before I watched it. as Danny said, I shouldn't have eaten anything at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you could have eaten before or after, you would have
or
felt
way
sick.
After,
yeah,
right.
Okay, yeah.
But
then you would have gone right before bed.
I know,
and then that's
a
whole other problem.
And then
I'm
awake.
Not supposed to eat after 8 o'clock. I'm
exactly.
Just letting you know.
And then I would have been awake, and then if I read a book like Adam did, I would have stayed awake all night. So there was no good to come of it. It's not hugely fast-paced. It's still with the same sound design, but if you have...
Well, that's the point.
Yeah.
Right? That was one of the cool things they did, so...
And they made the really horror-esque... It's funny. Resident Evil, the video game, always scared me a lot more than Resident Evil, the movie.
Well, you know... All right, so here's what I'll say, and how they sort of transitioned this to a modern game. What I loved about Resident Evil and Resident Evil 2 and that PlayStation era of those games is that there was a mechanic that they utilized to deal mm-hmm. with the fact that they had to, you know, load every new room.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was the past, you see. And what would happen is they would have a load screen, but the load screen was, if you were going through a door, all of a sudden you'd see the door in the blackness, and then you'd be like...
Really slowly, yes.
Like, open real slow, and you would have no idea what was going to be on the other side of that. So it was a thing that really built up the tension. They used a thing, load times, which you would think would be bad, and then they turned them into a positive. It's actually, for my money, the best thing about the Resident Evil series to date. That was so impressive to me that they thought about that. That's real ingenuity. But
this one doesn't have those
slow load times. But here's the way they did it. I think this is very smart. It's a forced camera perspective.
Yes.
So what happens mm-hmm. is when you go through the door, they do it in such a way so that you're just seeing a bit of a tunnel vision thing for a moment. And it could be that as soon as you turn back around in a room, it's like a whole
other
room.
Could be a zombie right there.
And it's easy to get lost. That was the thing where I said, where am I? What, you know, because everything's
dark.
Were
you freaked out by the shadow on the wall in the office?
Sure.
And then it was like, oh, it's a statue.
It's smart. So that's basically they used a forced camera perspective, which can really be dicey, but they used it in such a way that sort of recreates the tension that used to be done through a load screen.
Yeah.
And I really like that. I think that's probably the of what I've played so far, which is like your man also half an hour. But yeah, a lot of viscera. The zombies are very stressful.
They brought back Hunk and Tofu.
Yes.
I remember Hunk and Tofu. I didn't play the game, but I remember them because I remember going, what the
hell
would you play?
Yeah, that was at the end. That's at the end. They just wanted you to know.
But wasn't tofu like impossible to finish the game with?
You say impossible, but
did you finish the game?
I'm not like that, but yeah, I'm sure there are people that could beat it. Anyway, that was pretty cool. That was a cool zombie thing. And we'll come back to zombies in a bit, but there were a couple trailers that dropped.
Just a couple.
But some important ones, I would say, The Boys dropped, and then also, this Umbrella Academy, which is a really great, comic book series. What did you think? Did either of them really sort of pop at you, Adam?
I have a predisposition against The Boys to begin with.
Oh, really?
I did not like
a Garth Ennis fan.
I just, that whole edgelord vibe that the comic had did not work for me. And I also didn't like a lot of the misogyny that was in there. And so, yeah, I was not a big fan of The Boys. So honestly, I don't think the trailer really sold the show all that well, just because it doesn't tell you what's going on, really.
Right. It's for people who don't know the story, yeah, I was like,
the boys are and what they do. And,
yeah.
And
you saw more of the superheroes.
Right. And you see a lot of people punching people and banging their heads into things. And that's cool, I guess. The action's fun. But I would have, if I didn't know the comic, I would have walked out of there saying, what is that about? And you hope that your trailer, maybe, you know, I'm sure there might be another trailer coming down the road that's going to get deeper into it and probably be longer and talk more about what's going on. But, ultimately, that one, I was just kind of like, okay, I hope that the TV show will not go as deep down some of that tonal rabbit hole that as the comic did that turned me off. We'll see. I'm definitely going to give it a shot, but that trailer certainly didn't sell me on it.
What about Umbrella?
Oh, shit. There's someone out there who's trying to stop me from preventing the apocalypse. We need the full force of the Academy.
Bingo.
Yay, sisters. Yay, sisters.
Well, I know nothing about the Umbrella Academy comics. I know, other than they're written by the guy from My Chemical Romance.
Gerard
Way, yeah. I know nothing. So I will say that one looked great. It was,
and you got more of the concept.
Yeah. And it was very, very stylish. I like the look of the show and how they're handling a lot of the powers and stuff like that. I'm curious. That one hooked me more. I think it was, I walked out of that being like, oh, I want to know more about this and what this means and what it's about. And that's what a trailer should do. So yeah, one hit, one miss.
Ellen Page is in it.
Yes.
She's an X-Man, you know.
She was.
She was.
By the way, is she still she or they? Are we using the wrong pronouns?
I believe that Ellen,
okay.
Mean,
I'm just,
you should talk for a minute, and I will literally Google her pronouns. I don't want to. I definitely want to be that
like,
person.
I feel like that changed recently, but I could be wrong. I think the interesting thing for people who don't know, The Boys, which I completely agree with Adam, the trailer was not representative of what the comic was, and I don't know if that means they're changing the comic. But basically, the comic was basically about, yes, there's superheroes in the world. You saw those superheroes, but when superheroes have downtime, they get into trouble. They act up. They take drugs. They sometimes have reckless behavior. The boys were basically a crew of CIA agents who they're superpowered CIA agents who basically handle the super. They're like the cops of the superheroes. So, but that didn't come through on the thing. It is originally written by Garth Ennis, and yes, the original which I think it's supposed to take place in early 2000s. So a lot of people are like, oh yeah, it was so misogynistic, it was probably in the 90s. It's like, no, that wasn't that long ago. So hopefully they've updated that part. Umbrella Academy, I was actually very excited to see. I thought the trailer was much slicker. And again, I know we're trying not to judge all these books by their trailer covers, these shows. But I just thought, and Adam, you can attest to this because you don't know the comic. You've really got a feeling that you knew there's a bunch of superhero kids
right.
and they're at this academy.
Right.
The world is going to end. You kind of got all that.
There's an umbrella,
yes.
It's another comic
that takes place in alternate history where, who was it, Kennedy wasn't assassinated or something like that? But it's basically like in the 70s/80s, which brings me to my other thing. We've got a lot of comic book remakes that are taking place in the 80s right now, even on our very own network.
Indeed.
So I find it interesting how, and a little aggravating, that this is considered, I heard somebody say it the other day, oh yeah, I love period pieces. And when you say period piece to me, I'm thinking Shakespeare. I'm thinking, you know what I mean?
The 80s are to now as the 50s of Back to the Future were when that movie came out.
It's very frustrating. So when people are like, oh, it's another period piece, I'm like,
yep.
Ugh.
We're old.
So all those women getting pregnant that were having babies that were not previously pregnant earlier in the day, it's basically hinted that the character is a god, but it's not. It's obviously some type of, there's an extraterrestrial that decides that they're taking care of things. And I don't want to basically give away the story, but it was the lovely thing about the Umbrella Academy that was that it was sort of told in suites and like you would with music. It was kind of funny. That was the name of each of the things. So I'm wondering how much music is going to play a part in it. But they both looked really good. I'm actually going back. It's been so long since I've read The Umbrella Academy. I'm going to go back and kind of reread some when it first starts to make sure that I don't like completely comparing. I don't want to do that with The Boys. The Boys, if I go back and read The Boys, it's going to make me angry. So I'll probably just watch that for the purposes of this podcast. But I will go back and read a bit of Umbrella Academy because it was a very interesting story. And like Deadly Class, had some things to say about the time period.
I'm also very interested to see how they'll interpret Gabriel Ba's art. Gabriel Ba is one of my favorite comic book artists. It's him and his fraternal brother who will do stuff, Fabio Moon. And I think both of their art is really, really great. They did a story together called Day Tripper, which is actually maybe my favorite collected work graphic novel of the last 15 years. But yeah, his artwork is so amazing in Umbrella Academy. So I'm very curious to see how they'll pull from his ideas as they go further into the series. Because right now, I mean, there's a dude that's supposed to have like a big gorilla body, and there's definitely a guy with a big body, but he's got a trench coat on it. So I
and
wonder what the story is.
You see the monkey at the beginning, so you know it's possible that they're going to have some type of 3D effects or mocap effects going on. But we did not see his big body.
Yeah, I don't
his
think
big ape body.
Yeah, he's thick. But we don't know if he's gorilla thick or what yet. Could be a lot of things. Anyway, yeah, I think of the two of them, I would agree with you, Adam, that was the one that showed the right type of stuff, and it had a good song attached to it.
Yes, it did.
You liked that. That was it. I watched you watch it, and you said,
"Yeah, we did."
Good song choice.
Yeah.
Good use of the song.
Can't go wrong with the Bengals.
And good use of the song choice.
Indeed.
Yeah,
indeed.
I liked it. Anyway,
wait, was that the song that was produced by Prince?
Hazy Shade of Winter?
Yeah.
No, I think it was Manic Monday.
That was Manic Monday.
Manic Monday, okay. Yeah.
He wrote that song.
He did write that song.
Anywho.
Also a great song.
It is great.
I'm waiting for someone to use that in a horror trailer or something.
And ruin that. Yeah, Five on It is done for me.
Yeah,
Wait. Sure.
Oh, see, I like the way. See, if they use it well, that's fine.
Yes.
I'm sure Jordan Peele will find a way to ruin just about every single one of our faves.
Oh, no. I see. I'm fine with that. Somebody used they did a version of Smell Like Teen Spirit. And it was real bad.
Yeah, I remember that. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I remember
it was a horror. It was a horror movie.
People should just leave that alone.
And I just, not all songs are meant to be slowed down.
Right.
Now a lady sings Torch-like and scary things.
Yes.
Is not really. Anyway, I was fine with this. This is a good use of a song. Anyway, them's the trailers. And now we've got two TV series that we watched. And
the beginnings of any. Oh, no, actually, Adam got farther than any of us.
Indeed.
But here's what happened. When I said Karama was right at the top, these are both things that Karama said, we should talk about these things.
Occasionally.
And I have to say,
we're talking about getting sound effects on this podcast. We need one that's like, Karama was right.
That's it.
That we press that button every time that happens.
Wait, we have to say, whoever's mixing this this week, save
here's
that
the thing.
Sound.
Just, yeah.
Karama was right.
So, two shows. One is Genlock that you and I watch, Karama, and one is... Kingdom, which we all watched. So let's start with Genlock real quick, and then we'll dive into Kingdom.
We are at the dawn of a new age. What is Genlock if not the next step in humanity's evolution?
Hey, how you doing? Don't mind me, just learning how to walk. Again.
Looks like we got a team.
Why did? Because you came. That was like immediately. You said we should talk about this.
Well, I've been kind of fascinated by Genlock since it was announced, and okay, yeah, I'm going to pub this a little bit. I did get to talk to the Rooster Teeth team at New York Comic Con and Grey Haddock, et cetera. But I've kind of been hyped about this when I saw the cast because it's you know, we're anime fans, Danny. Like, we'll watch a good anime any day of the week.
Sure.
But it's rare that American voiceover Hollywood talent get involved. And so I was like, okay, this is either going to be really good or a really bad idea. And the more that I saw of the show and the features, Genlock is a show that starts basically tomorrow, exclusively online on Rooster Teeth. It features Michael B. Jordan, Dakota Fanning, Maisie Williams, who plays Arya Stark on Game of Thrones, Shari Belafonte, who's not listed, but you do hear her, Harry Belafonte's daughter, David Tennant, the Doctor. I think that's your favorite Doctor, right? All of them? You have a favorite?
I don't have a favorite. I don't play favorites when it comes to Doctor Who.
Monica Rial, who actually I got to interview for Sci-Fi, and Koichi Yamadera. Now, a lot of people might not know who he is. He's a pretty famous Japanese anime voice actor. He was the original voice of Spike on Cowboy Bebop, and he was also the original Togusa on Ghost in the Shell. The interesting thing about his character is he never speaks English. He always speaks Japanese, which I thought was fantastic. And it's a very international cast. That's just part of him. I was fascinated by the fact that, okay, Ruby is basically the claim to fame of Rooster Teeth. And this is kind of gearing up to be their next big thing. And I like Ruby has grown in its animation style. And I was wondering if they were going to use the exact same style that they used on Ruby. And yes and no, they have updated it. And I like the fight scenes are ridiculous. They look really good. If you're going to watch Rooster Teeth like you're going, like you saw Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse, this is not that type of animation. It is anime, but a different style. It's closer to the incredible movie you'll see at the beginning of Final Fantasy.
I would say definitely that I wouldn't call this a critique, but I would say that there are points where you go, okay, so the cutscene is going to end, and then I'm going to be in the mech fighting, right? Like, I kept reaching for my controller.
If you're not used to it, exactly. And that is one thing that sometimes throws people off. I think in this case, because the writing is so well, done so well, that even people who are not used to the animation style will get used to it as they get into the story. The other thing that I find fascinating is that Grey Haddock, who we had on stage and has also been a voice of many characters, this is his baby. He wanted it to be very international. He cast international actors, and he co-produced it with Michael Jordan's company, Outlier Society, which a lot of people don't realize. So Michael Jordan's actually got Michael B. Jordan, I should say, sorry, has money in this. Saw the first three episodes. The third one was actually very, very rough. So I'm going to say I really watched the first two episodes. The third one, I really wanted for the story. I like it. It's a dystopian future, as they all are. And there are mechs involved, as they all are. But they seem to be, I feel like it's a cross between Gundam and Pacific Rim. Because you can't. They kind of need to be sort of drift compatible with their mix. Otherwise, very bad things happen. It doesn't take two to drive them, though. And they're embroiled in a war. And the war, in the first three episodes, you don't get the whole reason why they're in the war. Kind of in a Mass Effect sort of way. You're not quite sure why we're at war.
Yeah, there's bad guys.
It's a very bad war, though. And the both sides fight with mechs, but the other side, which is being called the Union.
Yeah, they got nanotech.
Yeah, they have nasty nanotech.
Yeah, and they've got like spider bots.
Mm-hmm. They look a lot like Tachikomas from Ghost in the Shell, if you guys are familiar with that. But the tech that basically eats through everything, including skin, is kind of like, ooh.
Yeah.
And this is not for kids. Like, this is not an anime that you sit down and watch with, like, little kids. It's pretty violent. But it's not all violence all the time. It's not violence for violence.
But there's not a lot of blood, though. I mean, I think you could probably be, I mean, I don't know how young you'd go.
Yeah,
Teens are fine. But yeah, what I would say is this. If you don't watch a lot of mech, you could still get into it.
You could.
It's got some familiar sort of storylines to it, I think. Having a character meet a fate, or did they? And then the consequences of that sort of thing.
That's the only thing I want to say for people to watch the first two episodes. Please don't stop at the end of the first episode and think that is it, or you're not. Because at first I was like, oh boy, there's a lot of surprises. I really like David Tennant's character. It's funny. He's kind of being the doctor.
Yes, they actually they referred to him as the doctor once.
They do.
They do say it once.
They do.
Because, you know.
He is a doctor. He's actually a medical doctor in this.
Yes, he is. Yep. That David Tennant. He's very busy these days.
He is.
Because he's got that and he's got a podcast now.
Yes, which surprised me. And there was there's an interview that I got a hold of Michael B. Jordan even saying he wasn't sure with his schedule that he could handle this, but he was like, voiceovers, I could do. And then when he said he saw the storyline, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm doing this. But I just thought it was really funny to have Dakota Fanning basically plays his girlfriend and Shire Belafonte is his mom, which I just was not, that wasn't even listed. I wasn't ready for that. I kept thinking, I know this voice. How do I know this voice? And it's one of those things when you're listening and you look things up. It's fun. I like the, not fun in a, hey, I love war kind of way. Fun in a, hey,
I thought you were a huge fan. You were like, shock and awe.
It's a fun in an anime kind of way. Now, what did you think? Because many times I'm alone in this room when I like think animation or something is good. What did you think, Danny?
I would definitely agree. You said something about how it takes a minute to get used to the animation. It definitely is not the type of fluid looking stuff that I am accustomed to. It's not the type of thing that I necessarily would jump towards in that regard. But anything that involves the mechs looks great. It's the people that sometimes are a little less reliable, but the voice acting really kind of elevates it. And yeah, I mean, you get a really good sense within two episodes where they're going, and it just seems like it's going to be a good romp as far as the action's concerned. And then, yeah, I feel like if I say anything about it, there's one thing in particular that I really like regarding Michael B. Jordan's character that I find to be very interesting, that I like. They could have taken an easy out on something and didn't. And when you watch it, and you should give it a shot, I think you'll see what I mean. I think that there's a trick that comes of having a science fiction world where you can have giant mechs and all that kind of shit, where you'd think, well, you could do anything. But they create reasons why there are things that you cannot easily take care of that I think is very important. It makes it so that you continue to have stakes.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that really stuck out to me.
And there is a morale. There's a moral compass to this team. I think the other thing, and we keep talking about the animation a little bit, is because it's CGI 3D animation. For those of you who don't know what that means, it feels a little bit like if anybody watched Iron Man Armored Adventures or, like I said, or Ruby.
It kind of looked like Batman Ninja a little bit, too.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. So it is, it's not mocap. It is definitely animation, but a lot of the characters are created in 3D space and moved within a CGI environment, which is not what everybody's used to. This, the animation that we saw with Spider-Man is a little bit different. But again, I want everybody to just watch a couple episodes and tell me what you think, because I'm fascinated. I'm also fascinated by the reveal of who the Union really is, because I've definitely been told and it's been hinted at that in war, like, the lines between who your enemy really is and are, you know, can be very blurred. And I find that part fascinating. So, yeah. Let us know in the comments what you think.
Yeah. All right. Before we talk about the kingdom, please listen to this ad. You did it. Thank you. Hey.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Kingdom.
Yeah.
You watched three and, and a half
three and
episodes.
A quarter,
three
I guess,
and a quarter.
Probably.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
All right, all right, all right.
Yeah, I got one and a half. Exactly.
I watched one episode, so both of you are ahead of me. What is Kingdom, Adam? What is it?
Kingdom is a zombie show set in and Joseon, is that right? The Joseon Dynasty era of Korea.
Like feudal Korea.
Feudal Korea, yeah.
Sorry for any Korean language stuff that we just messed up.
I know, it's a shame because I watched...
Please don't at me.
As I said, I was talking to Danny and Karim about this. I watched it with subtitles because I much prefer that to English dub. But because of that, all the names of places, I'm not even going to try to say because they are just beyond my capacity to speak anything resembling Korean.
Maybe once you get a certain number of episodes in, you'll be better.
No,
at it.
It's just the way the language flows. I'll pick a word out and I'll be like, oh, I never. And seeing it in the subtitles, I'm thinking to myself, I never would have pronounced that way. But go figure. Anyway, basic setup. Karima compared it to a little bit of Game of Thrones, and I think that's certainly true. There's a lot of palace intrigue and politics going on around a zombie apocalypse type of scenario. It's only 6 episodes, 6 hours in the first season. Apparently this was a show that was pitched to Korean TV and turned down because of the gore involved. But Netflix was like, we have no problem with that. So, this is the thing. I am not a horror person. And I am definitely not a zombie person.
Me either.
I have zombie apocalypse recurring nightmares. And so I am very hesitant.
Don't play Resident Evil.
Well,
new one.
I played Resident Evil years ago. I mean, what was the other one? State of Decay.
Ooh.
Was the one that really got me. Yeah, that was. But anyway, so I'm not the audience for this show necessarily, but I really liked it so far. I mean,
it's beautifully shot.
That's the other thing, too. It looks amazing. It's very lavish. The production design is excellent. The costuming is great. I want one of those hats that these guys wear.
Wow.
Because they're awesome. Very ostentatious hats worn by many of the noble characters in this. And the thing about the show is that some of the best zombie entertainment is, tied up in the metaphor of what it means. Like, for example, Night of the Living Dead and its commentary on racism and things like that, and Dawn of the Dead and consumerism of the 80s or whenever that era came out, like late 70s.
Late 70s, and Day of the Dead, which is sort of a treatise on the military.
Right.
And
Kingdom is very much, could be, and I don't know if they deliberately did this, but it's hard to think that they didn't, seen as a having to do with the increasing gap between the haves and the have-nots in our world today.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to get into the politics of how to solve that problem, but I think we all acknowledge that there is a problem there, and you can draw a direct line to the storyline of this because it's a lot about the nobles and the people in power having their fun while the peasants all starve to death and what the potential horrible ramifications of that could be.
Yeah, it would be like if I looked at Twitter right now and just found out that LaGuardia has grounded all flights. Imagine the resulting chaos that might come of just a hypothetical.
Indeed. Hopefully that could happen. Hopefully not zombies, but anyway.
Yeah.
And also the other thing that's remarkable about my enjoyment of this show is that they are fast zombies. And I am a zombie when if I'm gonna watch.
These are World War Z zombies.
Or get into something. They're not World War Z zombies. They're more 28 days later.
Oh,
so they run as fast as a human can run.
Yeah.
Can they talk?
No. Not
okay,
so far.
So they're not Return of the Living Dead zombies.
No, they're
like
not
the original fast zombies.
These are very bestial. They just want to eat you.
So the thing that I find, and this is why I wanted to see if you guys would like this show, because I watch Korean dramas. I watch, so I'm used to seeing things with subtitles and even the period pieces. Like, if you guys are fans of Sun Kyung-gwan Scandal, which I'm the name I'm butchering, as well as, I feel like, Six Flying Dragons, I think that's another one. that you will like the action in this, but this is definitely a zombie, but it's a very, it's a zombie piece that could happen. That's the part that's creepy. Like,
yeah, I love
the way they explain how it goes about happening.
One of the things I love about it is in, you know, I think a lot of people, a lot of the zombie stuff we see, you know, you don't know. It's like, oh, it just happened and we don't know what caused it. And
right.
This is very upfront from the very beginning about why this is all happening and how it comes about. And it's a very interesting and unique spin on how a zombie apocalypse could start and how it could spread.
And the funny thing is, one of the reasons why it spreads and festers has a lot to do, like you said, with the political climate at the time.
Yep.
The haves have so much more. The royal houses and the elite have so much more than the peasants. And even the people working at the castles are like starving and things like that. That what people are forced to do just to live actually makes the, let's say, the disease fester.
And you see, and you guys haven't gotten...
Like the plague kind of thing.
You guys haven't gotten it yet, but you see some of, like, how selfishness and how I'm going to get mine at the expense... I don't care what it does. I'm going to do what I think is right, regardless of what everybody else thinks, makes it worse. And, you know, again, these are lessons that certainly a lot of us could learn in our current... Also, we all need to learn that once someone is dead, the vessel in which they once existed... is meaningless, and let's just let it go.
They need to just
hold on to the
go.
Memory of your loved one and burn their body instantly. Is what I'm saying. Not maybe not in this world right now, but if you ever start to hear that the dead are coming back to life and eating people, and the loved one dies in a way that would leave them like they got bitten by one of those people, just. It's over. You know, they may
lob their head off and walk away.
Yeah.
Or
hold
like,
on to the memories.
What's
that
your
you
name
have?
From 28 Days Later? The moment they get bit, just shoot them.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, it's really good. And you know, I have no problem with foreign films. I watch foreign films and foreign TV a lot. I don't, you know, subtitles don't bother me. So but I think it's also. It's well put together for a Western audience as well in the way it tells the story. You guys haven't even got, I mean, episode 3, this isn't any major
Everything
spoilers,
hits the fan.
But that's where things really start to go bonkers.
Now, did you see Train to Busan?
I did not.
Okay, you saw Train to Busan.
What about it?
Well, the whole horde of when the zombies really got going and it was like literally bodies upon bodies, like this Akira size
gotcha.
Thing of bodies.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
I think that's where we're headed.
I just, look, here's what I like. You see a lot of zombie stuff. I've not seen zombie stuff set in this period before, and I think it adds a lot. I mean,
yes.
Maybe I'm saying something that's really obvious, but it's just such an enormous difference, and that was the reason why, because I love zombie stuff. I am a horror guy. I have to tell you, I'm tired.
Yeah.
Of zombie shit.
Yeah.
I am bored of it. I have seen a billion zombie things. I don't watch Walking Dead or Fear the Walking Dead I almost don't watch any zombie related stuff anymore just because I've seen so much of it. And this, the reason why I was willing to give it a chance was because, yes, this is from a completely different time period. So it means that we're going to, and if you do it well, and that's the other thing about it, right, is the costumes are great. The cinematography is great.
Is
so
gorgeous.
It's a really, it's a stunning thing that you get to watch, and it adds a whole other layer. And yes, as you pointed out, Adam, they're still dealing with something that's relevant. So by setting it in a time period, they're not somehow erasing relevance to a modern audience, but they are adding something that I feel that the zombie genre, I mean, I've never seen anything quite like it before.
Yeah.
So it really, I think, is a standout. Karma was right.
Karma was right.
I need to go play the lottery today.
I think that if I'm a producer watching this show, I'm going to like start putting together my Western Old West zombie show or my 1920s gangster zombie show or Civil War era zombie, whatever, like something. I think Danny's absolutely right. It makes it feel so fresh.
It could be Civil War, I don't know, werewolves,
right?
Or gangster vampires. You know, I mean,
and you're not hit with this question, like, because when it's so modern, you're going, come on, nobody in this universe has ever heard of zombies. You know, that kind of thing. In this universe, they wouldn't have.
Right.
And the way they introduce it, that's the thing. The way they introduce the way this virus thing, whatever, gets loose and how it expands is just, yes, that could have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. If there was like werewolves, you know, Civil War werewolves or something.
Yeah, man, there's a lot of different places you could go and periods you could cover. And that is a thing that I think would be a great shot in the arm. I hope that more people look at Kingdom and say, oh.
And I think this
is
where...
And then take that type of risk.
This is where the streaming model helps, because I think Kingdom is six hour long episodes, right?
Yeah.
But because it's only six episodes, they can... The thing about period pieces is they're expensive. You have to design. You have to have costumes. You have to make it look authentic to the time. And, you know, to do a zombie show now, you need... That's set in the modern age, you need a house and a field. And that's pretty much it. And that costs nothing. So you can do 30 episode, 25 episode season of that show for what it would cost to do six episodes of Kingdom, but it's so much more impressive to do that. And I hope that, you know, that's it. So if you were going to do a Civil War werewolves, you know, do six episodes, make it a six episode series.
Don't do 13.
Yeah.
And then you're really exploring stuff too. And that's the thing, right?
And that frees up your budget to spend on making it look right and authentic.
Yeah. And the thing about something looking really good, especially if it's well written, is that you'll watch it more than once.
You
to go back and catch an idea. But if you're a cosplayer, I want to get a good look at this costume. You know what I mean? You know, or whatever. You've got an eye for anything. If something looks nice, you're probably going to come back. If the story is good, you're probably going to come back. So yeah, six episodes. I think that makes a lot of sense. I agree with you. Okay, so here's my question as we wrap. What would you say of all the things we talked about? What was the thing that won your week the most?
I mean, for me, it was Kingdom for sure. I didn't watch Genlock, so I couldn't comment on that. But amongst all the other news, I was really surprised by how much I enjoyed this show. So Kingdom was it for me.
Difficult.
No wrong answers.
I'm honestly going to have to say Kingdom also, because it just, I knew what I was, I kind of knew what to expect with Genlock. This I did not know, and you know me, I don't like horror, and I have commented on two horror zombie-related things in this podcast, which, by the way, for those of you horror-averse, I will not be playing any part of Resident Evil because I could not handle the gore and the entrails. That's not what this is, well, yet. I don't remember seeing gore and entrails, but I could watch Train to Busan, and I was able to function. So this is at that level. I'm gonna say Kingdom.
Kingdom gets my number two spot. So I could say overall, for me, the best thing that came out of the week was raising $340,000 for mermaids while playing Donkey Kong 64. I just think that's amazing. That unquestionably is the thing that is going to sustain me for a very long time. So that's my number one, but Kingdom number two. We'd be very curious to hear what was winning your week. Did any of these things jump off of you? And if you end up giving either Genlock or Kingdom a shot, I would love to hear your thoughts. So please.
In the comments.
Yeah, let us know. Thank you for listening. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, please subscribe. If you've never given us a review, reviews help. We would be very grateful for them. And please make sure that you're also checking out all of our other fine podcasts, Phantom File, Strong Female Characters, Project Blue Book, Behind the Panel, the official Deadly Class podcast. And and check out also Adam. He's going to slow jam me the news every day.
That's right.
And all of the Amazon podcasts, of which there are three that you can get on the Amazon Alexa scale. Whew. Did it. Where can everybody find you at home, friends? And on the internet.
You can find me, Karma, the Blurred Girl, THEBLERDGURL, mostly on Twitter and Instagram. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Rock the Faces, and I guess Twitch now I have to be on. So I'll let you know when that comes up. Maybe it's going to take me a while to learn because I'm old, but.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I believe in you.
Thank you. Thank you, Danny.
I think you can do it.
My name is Danny Roth. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary, also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week. We'll see you again next week.